This is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Nicole's off yesterday and today because she's become a homeowner, so she's nesting. I couldn't be happy for her getting a piece of the American dream. Chris Martin's been producing, doing your usual fantastic job, Chris. What are you doing for Thanksgiving? Any plans?
Well, I am not a homeowner. So I'm going to, but just my girlfriend and I are going to hang out and make a big dinner. I like keeping it small anyway, so it works out well this year.
Do you do turkey or something else?
No, turkey, kind of the standard stuff, spicy green beans, mashed potatoes and everything.
You know, I'll take some tips from listeners who want to text me because I'm smoking my turkey for the first time this year on my Traeger. And I'm going to do stuffing. I found a recipe where you can put stuffing in a turkey you make on the smoker. And so, but it's all new for me. So I've done the oven roasted. I've done the deep fried. Now I'm going to try I'm going to start brining it right after I get off the air today. So I'll give it a good overnight brine and then put it on the smoker. And I'll have a nice compare and contrast of the main methods of cooking when I get back on the air then. How about you, Sean?
Don't you find that the stuffing in the turkey as you cook it makes it soggy?
No. No. Really? See, that's what Wyman was talking about yesterday. I'm telling you, I never liked stuffing. I should put my wife's stuffing recipe up somewhere because I never liked it at all. Her stuffing is fantastic. And it doesn't, it's not soggy at all. It just gets the good turkey juices mixed in. And then I put a meat thermometer to make sure it gets up to 165, I think is the temp that you want to have so it's safe. But no, people have to stop this anti-stuffing mania that seems to have gripped our country. I don't like it. Sean, what are you doing? Got any plans?
Yeah, sort of. My parents don't feel comfortable coming over to visit me, and they don't want me to visit them for various reasons. Won't get into it. has nothing to do with COVID, so I don't know what's going on with them. So we're going to chat via Zoom or something like that. And a friend of mine, we're going to hang out, someone who I've been sort of hanging out during this, the COVID situation. We're going to just, I don't know, buy a roast chicken maybe at Safeway or somewhere and just have some food, hang out, maybe play some video game disc golf, which is very fun.
I thought you were a bit of a cook.
I am a bit of a cook, yeah. I just don't really... I mean, I've definitely cooked a ham, and I've done cooking things for Thanksgiving, but I think we're going to make sides. We're going to just take care of that stuff and then just purchase the protein somewhere.
Mm.
Yeah, already cooked.
I love cooking on holidays, and I tend to be the main course cook, and I like deep frying the turkey, but the cleanup got to be too much of a hassle. But I love trying new things like I'm doing this year with the smoker and the stuffing. On Christmas, I have a Showtime rotisserie oven that, what does he call himself, Old Nubbin? Cliff McGrath, the old soccer coach at Seattle Pacific, he gave me a Showtime rotisserie oven many years ago, and it comes out one day a year, and that's on Christmas Day, because I like to rotisserie cook a prime rib, and then I love ham on, I mean, I'm just very traditional. Turkey on Thanksgiving, prime rib on Christmas, ham on Easter, and it's just lovely. So the spiral cut ham, and then make pea soup with the ham bone. Oh, I never could cook when I was younger. I was horrible. And it's become such a passion of mine now. So days like this are fantastic. I mentioned my two younger daughters, and I'm supportive of this. I've got all these people. You're contributing to the problem. No, I'm living my life in a very responsible way. I don't want to get COVID. my two younger daughters, who have roommates. They they have separate apartments and houses where they share with roommates, but they have seen their roommates. They've been social, and they don't want to bring something home to me. And I'm fine with that. I'm sad. I'm horribly sad that for the first time in my life, I'm not going to be with all my family on Thanksgiving. And I mean, I get emotional just talking about it with you because, you know, I've talked about when I was a kid, holidays sucked. They really did because there was just, you know, either there was too much drinking or, you know, my mom had some other, you know, issues with bipolar things. And it was just turmoil. It was turmoil. And, you know, I said to myself at a very young age, this will never happen when I become a husband and a father. I was determined to have a happy home, especially on holidays. And that's been one of the greatest joys in my life is the, you know, these days that were just chaotic when I was a kid have been nothing but joyful now that I've become a dad. And now for the first time in my life as a parent, as an adult, I'm not going to be with all of my kids tomorrow. And that breaks my heart. But I'm not some COVID denier. I got all these people in the text messages who are accusing me of being a COVID denier. I'm not. I take it seriously. I just don't trust the motives of government. And I read a great piece that I'll share with you. Heather McDonald, we've had her on the show before. She's a great columnist, and she was writing at the Spectator. And she said, man, if the people who founded this country, if they had the same attitude that we have today, America wouldn't exist. You know, the people who came on transatlantic voyages, brought the pilgrims to Plymouth Rock. Nearly half of the 102 occupants of the Mayflower died in their first year of the settlement at Plymouth. As many as three a day were dying after they arrived in the new country. The earlier outpost at Jamestown, 1607, lost 66 of the original 104 settlers in the first 9 months. So coming to America had a more than 50% mortality rate. And word went across the Atlantic. People were dying at unbelievable rates coming to America. So did everybody stop coming to America? No. Ship after ship kept coming because there was something more important to them than safety. Religious freedom, passion for discovery, ambition, desire to have rights granted not by a king that can be taken away, but rights granted by your creator, given to you by God as a birthright. And that's what they care about. So they kept coming with these impossible odds of survival. And now we have the coronavirus, where even if you catch it, your chance of dying from it is about 1/1000th of 1%. Where the average age of the decedents, or the median age, is 80 years old. And that doesn't make it any less tragic that we've lost a lot of people. But just to kind of put in perspective, the median coronavirus death victim is 80 years old. The average age for men in America is 76 years. The average age for women is 81 years. So, again, doesn't make a death less sad. But I'm trying to give some perspective here. you know, what this all means. And now, instead of striving for freedom and celebrating business owners that want to just keep feeding their families and their employees' families, they're demonized by a cult of government zealots. And I'm not just talking about the politicians. I'm talking about all the citizens who have decided to put aside their individual decision-making choices and assign that power to Jay Inslee and to government officials. Are you nuts? They don't care about you. They care about power, control, and money. That's what politicians care about. And so, yeah, I'll make good decisions for me, and my family will make good decisions for us collectively. And we're not COVID deniers, and we're not taking risks, however minimal they might be. Because if it goes the wrong way, there'd be, you know, the girls would be racked with guilt. I've pretty much stayed in, except for occasional trips to the grocery store. Canceled my gym membership. Got a Peloton so I can work out here at home. I mean, on and on and on. But all these messages about being a COVID denier and encouraging irresponsibility, wrong, wrong, wrong. I'm encouraging individual freedom. I'm encouraging sovereignty over ourselves, our businesses. Like Dana, the restaurant owner in the Tri-Cities that I talked to last hour, he said, if you don't want to come to my restaurant, don't come. He said, I don't care. But government shouldn't be able to shut me down. And people shouldn't be told they can't come by government. And that's what I'm talking about with all of this. So I want to make sure people understand that we are sacrificing an awful lot of individual decision-making, and we've decided that safety is more important than freedom, even when the risk that, you know, is compromising our safety is minuscule. But, man, you compromise your freedom, that's a 100% risk right there. All right, let me get to some other things. So, sorry for my rambling little ad-libbed, wasn't planning on do this monologue, but I'm very passionate about all the things that we're talking about here. You better believe that. Some of the other things that have jumped out at me. As you know, you had people marching in the streets, rioting every night all summer. Jay Inslee wouldn't say one word about that. Unmasked, shoulder to shoulder, busting windows. Governor, what do you think about Chaz, Chop? First I've heard about that. He would just lie because to Jay Inslee, politics was more important than public safety. Now, if politics, he didn't want to get the left riled up because he needed their votes to be reelected. If politics was more important than public safety and health last summer, so that he would lie about not hearing about CHOP when he admitted during the debate that he had. Why do you believe that public safety and health is now more important than politics to Jay Inslee? Because it's not. And at his presser yesterday, Inslee was asked a question about, you know, why are people blowing this off? And here's what he said.
It's very difficult for me to understand people who just blow this off. I can't understand that. And I just hope that people care enough about their loved ones that they will want to have the biggest Thanksgiving celebration in human history next Thanksgiving, which you can't do if your relatives aren't alive.
Okay, so he, you know, again, he's saying, yes, that 1/1000th of 1% is going to hit your family, and it might. I mean, there are people in our state, certainly, who have died from this. But he says that the real turning point in all of this was, of course, Donald Trump.
But I'll tell you what happened in this, which is very disappointing to me. The day that Donald Trump tweeted, "Liberate Michigan,"
When Gretchen Whitmer put some restrictions on to save people's lives in Michigan, that was then followed by allegations of people who wanted to threaten her life. The day that that happened, the Republican support across the nation evaporated to help us. And it's been very disappointing. We would love to have Republican folks speak more broadly in this and offer their ideas about how we reduce this pandemic. And it has just been crickets from them, and I'm disappointed by that.
Now, again, that's a lie. He has no interest in engaging anybody other than people on his side politically. He used to come on our show once in a while. I challenged him. I caught him in the lie about not raising taxes. I challenge him, but it's always been respectful. In fact, nobody could cite one instance of me having a politician on the show and it not being respectful. But Jay Inslee, he doesn't want to talk. I have the biggest talk radio audience in town. He doesn't want to talk to you. He doesn't want to reach out to you because he's afraid that in the course of reaching out to you, that I will challenge him, which I would. It'd be respectful, but I'd challenge him on all the stuff we're talking about here. But and then he says, oh, I'm disappointed that the other side won't engage. He won't engage. You know, and good for him. Did an interview with Dave Ross this morning. But I think Dave was on vacation and still did the interview. But he has decided, as a matter of strategy, to not engage my audience. That's fine. That's his choice. But don't tell me you want to engage the other side when that clearly is not how you actually conduct your life. Okay. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Stories, Fastest 15.
I'm fired up today. Very passionate today about all the stuff we're talking about. I love feeling this level of passion. We're going to check the news for you. And then the continued intentional destruction of our region. I will talk with Mike Zolan from the Seattle Police Officers Guild about the shocking number of cops leaving Seattle Police Department. Details straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. As I told you on yesterday's show, I can't remember a few day period of such violence in our region as the Seattle City Council was voting to defund the police department even more. Just a few blocks away, there was a stabbing murder at a low-income housing development in Belltown. A 33-year-old man was walking down a sidewalk, and he was randomly stabbed in the neck. He's going to be okay. There was a RV or a tent pop-up camper in the South End, where a convicted felon tried to stab and set on fire his tent camper roommate. It just goes on and on and on. A Hispanic 20-year-old man shot to death down in the South End. There was another shooting yesterday afternoon down in SeaTac because Seattle's cancer is metastasizing throughout the region. And reducing the level of cops at a time of unprecedented violence is truly one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in all my years of covering public policy around here. Mike Zolan is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. He joins us once again here on the Dory Monson Show. Mike, always good to talk with you.
Dory, happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
I'm serious, man. I've never seen anything like this with violent crime, murders on a sharp increase, and politicians saying, hey, let's get rid of our police department. I mean, this is just unbelievable, Mike.
Well, it's three things. It's bizarre, it's nonsensical, but it's predictable. Bizarre because it is completely unprecedented. Nonsensical because it doesn't make sense, and we're being driven and swallowed by far-left progressive socialist activists that continue to push false narratives about public safety, in particular police officers, that I'm obviously putting a hard stop to, trying to at least, and you're doing a fantastic job as well as your listenership. But also the third point is, it's not surprising. I mean, this is this is something that we can see it play out. If you remove funds for police and you remove police jobs, it just makes sense. And it's sad that people are going to be plagued with more crime. And evidence of that, when you have people with no statistical data, anything to point as far as being what they deem as a solution for public safety, when they insert social workers into a police problem, you're going to see them being visited by crime. And sadly, a couple of days ago, in what you just referenced, is a social worker losing their life to this violence via mental health and homeless issues. So to me, I feel sad for that individual, and particularly the victims that were obviously victimized by this psychopath. But, you know, we have to spotlight this. This is a major problem. We cannot we can't politicize public safety, because we will all suffer. And evidence of that is what's occurring when they defund us.
Well, yeah. And I talked about what you just referenced on my show yesterday, that they said, well, we don't need armed police to respond to 911 calls. We'll send out social workers. And 2 days ago, we got a vivid example of how that could play out when a social worker, unarmed, encounters a violent psychopath and he stabs her to death in her place of work, where she was trying to help the lives of people like her attacker. And there is such a disconnect between reality and this fantasy world that the Seattle City Council seems to be living in, although I think they know exactly what they're doing, and I think they want to flood our region with crime, and then they're going to get their what they believe is their Marxist utopia once we burn to the ground.
And it's playing out, and they don't care. You hit the nail on the head. This is their agenda. This is what their end game is. And this is what happens when you inject politics into public safety, but you also inject emotion, how you feel about things. And feel-good issues that impact public safety, 9 times out of 10, reflect negatively. Because it doesn't really envelop, and they aren't enveloped in common sense. It's nonsensical, it's emotion, and it's reactionary. And clearly, any march towards socialism in terms of removing funds from police officers is injecting that emotion. And it puts everybody at risk, regardless of your politics.
Sure. Yeah, and, absolutely.
And this is going to continue to play out, Dory. Crime will visit your doorstep. And it's because of the policies that this city council is basically bullying towards all of us based upon their level of activism through emotion.
Are the numbers that my colleague Jason Rantz a couple of days ago reported, 34 more Seattle police officers have left the department. The total number of separations for the year could hit about 200, and that's before the 18% defunding by the Seattle City Council from a couple of days ago. Are all those numbers accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've reserved comment on numbers, but I've now seen that reserving comment is not being beneficial to help try to protect everybody's public safety. And so we have to push out the reality is that is accurate. And sadly, and this is me kind of waiting in the lines of being hyperbolic, but if this trend continues, this time next year, Dory, we could see 400 to 500 officers gone from the streets of the city of Seattle. And imagine that. Imagine what crime will be like then.
Well, I ran the numbers a couple of months ago, Mike, and there's no question that we have fewer cops per capita than at any time in our city's history. We also have record number of murders and violent crimes. If people do not see the connection between those two things, then they're pretty blind. And so this has to be planned. This has to be a goal of the people on the city council and elsewhere in politics.
Yeah, and then, you know, definitely removing funds is a goal of them to put forth their agenda. But sadly, their agenda is going to impact everybody in our region negatively because of the fallout from crime. And then removing 200 officers and the march of not having enough cops on the street, as you indicated before, is indicative of the socialist agenda. But I think, Dory, that this will take decades for Seattle to recover, at least get the staffing levels needed to protect adequately everybody's public safety interests.
Well, the other thing that I pointed out, Mike, is Boston's about the same size as Seattle. They have roughly double the number of cops. And if people would notice from the spring and summer of 2020, when you heard about cities that were burning and cities that were in chaos, you heard about Seattle and Portland and Minneapolis, Philadelphia, New York City, Baltimore. Boston was never mentioned. And to me, it's because it's an adequately policed town that was able to deal with the violence that burned down so much of our city and so many others across America. So again, all people need is to look at real life to reach proper decisions. And we have a city council that is determined to destroy our city. I don't think there's any question about that now.
Well, clearly the council is not governing in reality. And you mentioned real life. I don't see that their vision of what they deem as being real life is being adequate. It's nonsensical. Boston PD is double the size of the Seattle Police Department. And Seattle is a little bit more ahead in population. And we have been so behind the eight ball in terms of staffing for years, in fact, decades, that this march to socialism is going to get worse for us and we're going to lose more cops. Everybody's public safety is going to be impacted. And I think maybe the level we need to hit, Dory, is a total downfall of public safety. And then maybe people in our region will wake up to say, you know what, maybe we need to get active, become the reasonable activists that we are, and start holding our elected officials accountable and vote different. Because this is going to get worse.
How many more people are going to have to die before we get there? Final thing, I only have about 30 seconds left, but this is big national news, the defunding of Seattle Police. I've seen you all over the news. I saw you on Fox News this morning, Mike. Is that TV star mustache that you've grown? Because you're doing all TV appearances?
Well, I got to have some level of positivity in a negative time frame in our lives, and Movember visited me and I decided to partake, and my Irish whiskers are trying to resemble what a mustache should look like, but I'm failing for sure. But I appreciate it, Dory. I appreciate you drawing attention to it, but we got to be self-deprecating and make fun of ourselves. But it's for a good cause. It's for men's health issues. Yep. I almost said mental health because I feel like we're trying to wrap our heads around a lot of stuff that's crazy.
Yes, we are. All right. Well, I know you can take I know you can take constructive criticism from a friend. You ain't no Tom Selleck.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to shave this thing off. But more importantly, as we move out of here, and I appreciate the time, you know, we launched a new podcast called Hold the Line with Mike Solon. We're going to launch it today, actually, and if people want to visit that, you can visit at any kind of platform that has podcasts. And we're also still doing StopDefunding.com. We have over 200,000 signatures. And I think our campaign was successful. You know, they started at 50%. Obviously, they got 20. And I think knocking 30% off is trying to save public safety in our region.
Yeah.
So credit to you and your listenership for participating.
Well, good for you for keeping up the fight. I know it's tough around here right now, especially. All right, Mike, always good talking with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dory. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Mike Solon, he's the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. And my question for you, how long are you going to put up with this from your politicians? How many more people are going to have to die before people say maybe it's time for a change of leadership? You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Now, as I said, the more we become comfortable with government telling us how we must live our lives, giving up rights, giving up freedoms, what could happen down the road with all of this? Well, let me tell you about a couple of cabinet appointments that Joe Biden has made. A senior advisor is Representative Cedric Richmond, who has as part of his agenda to disarm law-abiding citizens, not criminals, but to disarm law-abiding citizens. Tucker Carlson had this clip of Cedric Richmond, one of Biden's now senior advisors, telling CNN that he's all for gun confiscation in America.
If it is a buyback, then I'm all for it. If it's a mandatory buyback, I think they you may run into some complications, but the thought of it does not offend me, and it sounds like something I could support.
A mandatory buyback, which is government confiscation of your guns. And he's not the only one. He has also hired Jennifer O'Malley Dillon to be the next White House Deputy Chief of Staff. She also is for the government taking away citizens, law-abiding citizens' guns.
But a plan that supports, bless you, mandatory buybacks of weapons of war. An assault weapon ban is very, very important, and we need to have it. But that only takes weapons of war off the streets in the future. It does nothing for weapons of war that are currently out there. And I think there's 15 or 16 million.
Okay, so they are for mandatory buybacks, government confiscation of 15 to 16 million now legally owned guns. Now, how in the world can you achieve that goal? Well, get people comfortable with government edicts. And if you have to have a health crisis to get people comfortable with government telling them what to do, how to live their life, well, then it'll be even easier the next time. Oh, yes, indeed. All right, check the news for you. And then the big lead at 2 is coming up next.